The opinions expressed on the Fanalyze podcast are individual and are not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the fourth episode of the Fanalyze podcast. It's a busy time in the sports world. We're going to start off with a brand new segment that we think you'll all be a fan of, and then we'll head over to Christina's Bleeder Bandwagon segment. So this brand new segment, we're going to call the Canada NHL State of the Union, or something along those lines. Essentially, what we're going to do is divide up the Canadian NHL teams and give you an update on their standing post-trade deadline, ahead of the playoffs, and what their team trajectory looks like. So we'll start off with Josh.
All right, so for my first team, my first Canadian team, I had to go with my team, the Toronto Maple Leafs. A little just quick rundown of what happened at the trade deadline. So the pieces that they brought in were Scott Laughton, a 2027 sixth round pick, a 2025 fifth round pick, Brandon Carlo, and Johnson Rhys. So the two main pieces here are Scott Laughton and Brandon Carlo. So Scott Laughton has 27 points in 63 games. No, he's not a guy who's going to light up the score sheet for you, but that's not why they brought him in. He's going to be a bottom six player, if anything. He's a great two-way guy. He's gritty. He plays on the PK, and that's exactly what the Leafs need, especially heading into the playoffs. Lawton's coming to his hometown to play, so, you know, might have that little extra motivation. And he's been linked to Toronto for a couple of years now at the trade deadline, but took until this year to finally happen. And he is signed through the 2025-2026 season at a really nice $1.5 million per year. So it's a pretty good contract, and you get him for more than just this playoff run, but maybe next year as well. And then for Brandon Carlo, I love this man. You know, 9 points in 66 games, that's nothing crazy. In fact, that's pretty bad, honestly, points-wise. But again, that's not why they brought him in. He is a 6'5 beast on defense, and you know, he plays a playoff style of hockey, a Berube style of hockey. He's not a fun guy to play against, and he's got a couple years left, so he's signed through the 2026-27 season at a pretty nice $2.485 million after the Bruins retained some salary. Currently second in the division, destined for the playoffs, and I see them in a playoff spot for the next few years, honestly. Their prospect pool isn't, you know, the brightest. They've got guys like Noah Chadwick, 50 points in 62 games in the WHL. Alex Steeves, who isn't really a prospect. He's 25 at this point, but he's top 10 in AHL scoring, so that's pretty good, over a point per game. Easton Cowan, we know what he does. Not great World Juniors this year, but, bounced back, and he's been great in the O. And then Ben Danford, great defensively. And same with Topi Niemelä. So not the best, but also not bottom of the league by any chance. And going a little up north, we have the Winnipeg Jets. So they brought in Chris Drieger, Luke Shen, and Brendan Tanev. And they only had to get rid of 2 seconds, a fourth, and then Kaapo Kähkönen. So they essentially just did a goaltender trade between Chris Drieger and Kaapo Kähkönen. And honestly, I don't think either team really lost. They're both pretty similar in stats. Luke Shen, gritty guy, 5 points in 62 games. You know, obviously not a lot to offer up front, but he's good, strong, physical defenseman that adds depth to your roster. And they have Luke Shen through next season at a decent $2.75 million. A bit expensive for him, honestly, especially at he's late in his career at this point, but, you know, it's nothing crazy. Then you got Brandon Tanev, who 17 points in 63 games. He's a good bottom six center. He'll give you 20 to 30 points a year. And he's got a cap hit of $3.5 million. He is an upcoming UFA, so this is a rental. But Winnipeg can afford to take on some rentals because they are a true Stanley Cup contender. They have gone on to have an amazing season. They've broken records. They're first in the league right now. tied with Washington on points. They're first in goals goals against, second in goals for, I believe, or maybe the other way around. And it's not like they're really good now, but they're going to be terrible in the future. No, they've got a pretty good prospect pool. You know, they've got Braden Jaeger, who is doing really well in WHL, 49 points in 30 games. Colby Barlow, who is a point per game also in the OHL. And then obviously Brad Lambert, who having a little bit of a down year with 29 points in 47 games. But we know his potential, and we know that these guys can really bolster your team in the future while you still have a great team right now. So Winnipeg is in a great position right now and in the future. They're going to be a team to be reckoned with for years to come.
So next up, I'm going to be talking about the Edmonton Oilers and the Calgary Flames. And talking about the most recent news with the Oilers, they have just 5 wins in their last 15 games, despite a 37-24-4 record. They are 3-8 over the last 11 games, which is one of the worst in the league right now. But to go back to the game against the Devils, New Jersey was missing forward Jack Hughes and on D, Dougie Hamilton, which are two very impactful players on the Devils. And games just like that are games that we'd expect Edmonton to take advantage of, but that's not the result we're seeing. The Edmonton Oilers' struggles go beyond just that one loss, though. They've been facing a tough stretch in the past month. They've ranked 31st in goals against per game at 4.09, despite top scorers like Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl continuing to produce. McDavid with 60 assists on the season, and Draisaitl scoring 47 goals, and he extended his career-high consecutive game points streak to 16 games and counting. So their offense, and more importantly, their team leaders, doesn't seem to be the issue. The team seems heavily reliant on their top players, with the secondary scoring and defense faltering, though. And in the past month, the Oilers' penalty kill is sitting at a concerning 75.6%, which is 24th in the league. Their inability to play a complete 60 minutes, coupled with weak special teams, is leaving them exposed to teams that they should be able to beat, as we've seen in their recent losses to teams like the Sabres and the Devils. And as the Oilers seem to be slipping slightly in the standings, there's a possibility, not saying that it's likely, but that there's a possibility that they will enter the wildcard spot, meaning a tougher matchup in the playoffs. Despite this, and potential moves in the offseason, maybe evaluating their goaltending situation and their blue line, the Oilers still have hope. Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are still playing at an elite level, both on their way to greatness. And Edmonton ranks near the top in 5-on-5 expected goals percentage, which means they're creating chances. It's just a matter of finishing. If they can tighten up defensively and get even league average goaltending, they have everything they need to make a deep playoff run. I believe in them, and I think you should too. So next up, just a few hours south, the Calgary Flames, who are lower in terms of standing with 30 wins and 23 losses, including 11 OT losses, they stand fourth in the Pacific after the Oilers. They are currently fighting the Canucks for a wildcard spot in the West, with just a slim margin of points between the two Canadian teams. And as of March 13th, the Flames may be the second team in NHL salary cap era history to make the playoffs, being the lowest scoring team in the league, the first team being the 2009-2010 Boston Bruins. The Flames are currently dead last with 167 goals scored. This shows that Dustin Wolf, the Flames goalie, is playing exceptionally well for the team. Right now, rightly so, as Wolf has a .915 save percentage, which ranks tied for fourth in the league among goalies with at least 30 starts. This also reflects the defensive ability of the Flames, who rank in the top 10 for fewest goals allowed, sitting at 8th with 204 goals against. Connor Zary is also suspended for 2 games because of an elbowing hit against the Canucks defenseman, Elias Pettersson, which is definitely a hit to the Flames' offense, as they will be facing 2 difficult teams, being the Leafs and the Panthers, in the future at the time of this recording. For the future, the Calgary Flames will need to address their scoring issues, as their lack of offensive depth could hinder long-term success. Dustin Wolf's emergence as a reliable goaltender provides hope, but the team will likely need to make strategic moves to bolster their offensive core and improve their special teams. The Flames will need to rely on internal development and possible trades to bring some younger blood to the team in order to remain competitive in the coming seasons.
Now, we all know with the Ottawa Senators that they've been in a long and painful rebuild. They do have some great building blocks and franchise cornerstones, but this is the first year they've truly been in the thick of the playoff race. They made one big swing at the trade deadline, which does seem promising to propel them towards a wildcard spot. Christina will analyze that.
The Buffalo Sabres acquire Josh Norris and Jacob Bednar-Docker, while the Ottawa Senators receive Dylan Cousins, Dennis Gilbert, and a second-round pick in the 2026 NHL Draft. I personally think the Senators definitely won this trade. I mean, when you got Cousins, a young player who may struggle but has no health concerns compared to Norris, who there's just been way too many risks, especially with his shoulder and other injuries. I think Cousins will be a really good player for the Senators. Already in his debut as a Senator, he had an assist and setting a career high with 9 hits, but he didn't stop there. In the next game, against the Detroit Red Wings, he delivered another standout performance. With just minutes left, Cousins scored his first goal as a Senator, and it turned out to be the game winner, which was huge for Ottawa as they secured their 2 needed points and helped them maintain their first wild spot card in the Eastern Conference standings.
And now we'll move on to our final two teams. First, we'll start off out west with the Vancouver Canucks. The Canucks and the Canadiens, the next team I'll touch on, are borderline playoff teams, and they weren't as active at the trade deadline as all the aforementioned teams, which is why there's been a focus on their trades. However, with the Vancouver Canucks, I'll start with their prospect pool. The Hockey Writers give them 17th grade out of the entire 32 NHL teams. They do have some good prospects out there like Jonathan Lekkerimäki, Tom Willander, Elias Pettersson, the defender, and they have other guys that have recently joined the team. Riley Patterson is a point-per-game player in the OHL, a fourth-rounder from this past year's draft. Atu Rautti is a forgotten player that's in their system, a former second-round pick by the New York Islanders. Furthermore, as I mentioned, they had a quiet trade deadline. They continued the trend of trading away aging D-men, but for a team that's looking to contend, those aren't necessarily the typical moves that you'll see. They did acquire Drew O'Connor after the JT Miller trade, which has proven to be a solid pickup for them so far. However, the JT Miller drama still seems to be hanging over this team a little bit, as we discussed in episode 1. Elias Pettersson severely underperforming his contract, so that's not going great for Canucks fans, and Thatcher Demko is still on IR. But more on their goaltending in a minute. First, I'll touch on the fact that at the time of recording, their top goal scorer is Jake DeBrusk with 23 goals. That's not sustainable for a team with cup aspirations, especially considering everybody else doesn't even have 20 goals yet. And then if you look at the team's point production, Quinn Hughes, 61 points at the time of recording. That's what you would expect from the perennial Norris candidate. But nobody else has above 40 points at this point in the season. Again, you're going to need more production from more players if you're going to go on a playoff run. Back to the goaltending, Lankinen has stepped up and stepped in for Thatcher Demko. 42 games played this season, 23 wins, 4 shutouts, 2.5 goals against average, and a .904 save percentage. They are typical of a starting goalie in today's day and age, probably on the upper end, but Canucks fans definitely have to be pleased with what Lankinen has done in the absence of Thatcher Demko, especially keeping the Canucks in playoff contention after losing their fan-favorite goaltender. Now, the Western Conference wildcard race has been heating up, the second wildcard spot, because the Wild are pretty comfortably in the first, but the Calgary Flames, Vancouver Canucks, Utah Hockey Club, and St. Louis Blues are all within a few points of each other, still aiming to get that final wildcard spot. So by no means is the Canucks season over. It's just going to be about whether their big names can step up, like a player like Brock Besser, who is maybe going to be moved at the deadline. He needs to step up, be a leader, and increase his point production heading into the playoffs this year. And lastly, we'll move over to the Montreal Canadiens. There's no better place to start than the prospect pool. They're third ranked by the Hockey Writers and ESPN. I'll just list off a couple of names here of their top prospects. Ivan Demidov, Joshua Waugh, Michael Hage, Owen Beck, Logan Mailloux, Sean Farrell, Florian Jacquet, and Atos Koivu. All of those names have tremendous potential. Some of them are much closer to joining the active roster than others, and even Joshua Waugh was recently called up. But there are some big names coming in next year to help reinforce the team, and others that are further out, but they have an absolutely stellar prospect pool. And for their developing prospects who are a few steps away from the NHL. Their AHL affiliate, Laval Rocket, are first in the entire AHL, so they are going to be going on a serious playoff run in the minors, I suspect. Now, looking at the Montreal Canadiens season stats, their top goal scorer, Cole Caulfield, he's reached a career high in goals this season, but they do have five players on a 20-plus goal pace. And then if we look at point production, Suzuki's leading the way. Cole Caulfield is not too far behind. Lane Hutson, as we mentioned last week in our Calder episode, is making a huge impact on the Montreal Canadiens roster. Slafkovsky's looked stellar since the Four Nations faceoff, and Jake Evans, with his new contract, comes in fifth place in Montreal Canadiens points. Now, the Canadiens' fourth line is statistically the best in the NHL so far this season. That consists of Yoel Armia, Jake Evans, and Emil Heinemann. Now, Montreal are still in the playoff race. You could say that, considering their rebuild, they are ahead of schedule. What most people wanted to see out of Montreal this year was some improvement and more consistent play. And since around December, and particularly since they slumped a little bit before the Four Nations faceoff, they've come back firing, and they are well ahead of schedule for this rebuild. Kent Hughes, at the trade deadline, gave a very important speech after not trading for anyone, which I think shows why the Canadiens are destined for future success. He had spoken to Captain Nick Suzuki and basically said, look, before the deadline, you can't come to us and not want us to trade players and keep the band together if you're not holding up your part of the bargain. The Habs then went on a five-game winning streak after the Four Nations faceoff ahead of the trade deadline. So they didn't move anyone, and they didn't panic, nor did they add anyone, but the prices, especially for veteran forwards at this trade deadline, was astronomically high. The Canadiens didn't need to make a panic move, and they didn't. So it's nice to see Kent Hughes sticking to the plan. Lastly, I'll cover their draft picks. They have two first-rounders this year, 2 seconds, 3 thirds, and 2 fourths, plus one in each the 5th through 7th round. So the Canadiens are still loaded up on draft picks. And if they make the playoffs, they'll still have 2 first-round picks, so they can continue this steady rebuild. The last thing I'll touch on, though, is their contract situation, which is phenomenal. Their highest-paid player is 26-year-old Patrick Laine with an 8.7 AAV. However, Nick Suzuki, their captain, 7.87 AAV until 2030. Cole Caulfield, 7.850 AAV until 2031. Now, Brendan Gallagher and Josh Anderson's contracts are still lingering from the Marc Bergevin era at 6.5 and 5.5, which are more than they should be making for their point production at this point in the season. However, Kirby Dach is only at 3.36. Alex Newhook is at 2.9 for another 2 years after this season. And Jake Evans just signed that contract extension till 2029, where his new AAV will be 2.85. So the Canadiens have lots of flexibility. Oh, and not to mention, Juraj Slafkovský is going to be 7.6, so less than Caulfield and Suzuki, and that contract will run until 2033. So the Montreal Canadiens are in a great cap situation. They have a lot of draft picks. They're ahead of schedule in the rebuild. It will be a big summer for them. Whether or not they make the playoffs this year is not critical to team success. Would it be lovely for them? Yes, but it's not necessary at this particular point in the rebuild. They've stuck to the plan, and it's working out for them. Honestly, if the likes of Winnipeg, Edmonton, Toronto don't hurry up and end this cup drought, the Montreal Canadiens could very well, within the next 2 to 5 years, find themselves being the first Canadian team to win a Stanley Cup since they did it back in 1993. Okay, now we'll head over to our Bleeder Bandwagon segment. This is the second of 4 parts. This week we have Christina on the phone, who's going to be taking her quiz to prove her fandom of the New Jersey Devils. So Christina, would you care to tell us about your past as a Devils fan?
Yeah, for sure. I've been a Devils fan for a few years now. No matter the ups and downs, they've always been my go-to team. Even though through all our tough seasons and bad luck again this season, I'm still going to be standing by my team.
Okay. So we'll hand it over to Josh, and to run over the rules again, there's going to be 5 questions going up from 100 to 500 points, and then there'll be a 6th question where you choose how many of your points that you've accumulated you want to wager on your last question. For reference, Miguel finished last week with 200 points, so if you can be 200 points, then you'll be above Miguel. So I'll hand it over to Josh now to start off with the first question.
All right, how are you feeling about this quiz? You ready?
I'm ready. I'm a bit nervous, but I think I got this.
Who on the Devils won the Hart Trophy in 2018 over the likes of Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, and Claude Giroux?
Was it Taylor Hall?
That is correct. Congratulations. All right, 100 points on the board here. Moving on to the 200-point question. Can you name all of the trade details that sent Taylor Hall to the Devils?
He was traded from the Hurricanes, I'm pretty sure. And then they got someone from the Blackhawks, and then they got Hall to the Devils.
So close, but the correct answer was it was just a straight-up one-for-one for Adam Larson. So Taylor Hall was sent from the Oilers to the Devils. And this question's for 300, so let's see if you can get this one. Who is the all-time leader in points for the Devils?
Patrick Elias.
The correct answer was indeed Patrick Elias with 1,025 points. Congratulations. All right, there's 400 points on the board now. Yeah, Miguel is crying over there a little bit. He's not feeling too confident. You're doing great. So we're going to move on to the 400-point question. What was the first number retired by the Devils, and who wore it?
It was number 4, Scott Stevens.
Are you locking that in?
I'm locking that in. I know this one.
That was quick. That is 100% correct. No hesitation. Wow, you are doing amazing right now. 800 points. 800 points blowing Miguel away right now. But you haven't gotten to the wager question yet. But before that, we have our 500-point question. Before the Devils moved to New Jersey, they played in two different places. Where were they, and what were their team names?
The first one, they were originally the Kansas City Scouts, and then they became the Colorado Rockies, and then they moved to New Jersey to take on their current name, the Devils.
That is correct. That's amazing. You went 4 for 5 there. Moving on to the wager question, you're going in with 1,300 points. How many of those points would you like to wager away?
I'll do 100.
All right. On April 22nd, 1988, a Devils player scored 8 points in a playoff game. Who was it?
I actually don't have any idea. Yeah, I actually don't know.
You don't know? All right.
No.
All right. We're gonna call it there. The correct answer was Patrick Sundstrom, Devils legend. But yeah, all in all, you did amazing. What is that, 1,200 points? That is definitely better than Miguel's score. No shade on Miguel, but yeah, you did an awesome job, and congratulations, you are currently in first place.
Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in to the 4th episode of the Fanalyze podcast. Looking ahead to next week, we'll continue with our Bleeder Bandwagon series when Josh faces the Toronto Maple Leafs fandom quiz. As always, you can send in your own takes or call into the show to get your opinions heard. March Madness is starting up. We could do a bracket challenge and analyze what that will look like. Also, NFL free agency has been really hot lately. Some big players moving around. We'll talk all of that next week.